The Diamond Sutra is one of the shortest of the Mahayana Sutras. But it's still about twice as long as it needs to be. And I was studying it again last night, and I realized in the rest of the sections, there are no further ontological points that are being made. No essential knowledge that isn't contained already in the first 10 sections. And so rather than belaboring the points that have already been made, I think we will skip to the final section of this great sutra this morning and then move on to sutras that deal with the implications of this point. This is a kind of a one-note sutra, and if you understand the point made in the third section, then you will get the entirety of the principle that is being expressed by the diamond cutting sutra, and it will succeed in cutting the diamond mind accurately. And so if we remember that section, the goal of the spiritual quest in the Buddhist idiom is to become a bodhisattva, because that's the portal to reaching Buddhahood. The bodhisattva is one who takes a vow to save all sentient beings. But if you believe that there are any sentient beings to save, you are not a bodhisattva. If you understand that logic, then you will be free of all your desire to be a doer, an agent, someone who accomplishes something, someone who rescues, someone who produces, someone who achieves, someone who is worthy, someone who is someone. That someoneness and the belief that there's some kind of a definite world in which something needs to happen and in which you have a particular task to accomplish, a mission, a purpose, an intention that justifies your existence and that gives you access to an infinite consciousness from which you have been somehow barred. All of that is a delusional idea, a frame of reference that must be released. It is true that you are the totality of consciousness that contains an infinite number of interpenetrating realms, dimensions, vibrational frequencies, creative potentialities that are not immediately visible in the properties of what is quaintly referred to as matter. And that underneath that apparent panorama of solidity lies a realm of magical potentiality that can be tapped into if one is in the totality and purity of consciousness that is not contaminated by egoic projections, but instead the consciousness in Kali Yuga tends to remain in a tiny reality tunnel, as Anton Wilson used to call them, a tiny sliver of your infinite consciousness, and all you see is one flatland realm and are not aware of any of the others. And within that tiny realm of the ego's ant-like existence, it seems to have an infinity of possibilities. But it's what Hegel called a bad infinity. There's an infinite number of points in 1 centimeter, but there's also an infinite number of points in 1 kilometer or 1 light year. There are an infinity of infinities. You can be in a very small one or in a very large one. But the smaller that your sphere of consciousness is, the more repetitive, the more one returns to a slight variation of the same form of suffering. And you're suffering because you're trapped in a tiny bubble consciousness that needs to pop, but you're terrified of popping it and being boundaryless and realizing your infinite potential. And so you stay loyal to the signifiers within that realm, and you cannot become aware of that which is beyond it. Or if you do become momentarily aware of it, let's say because you're on some chemical substance that alters your consciousness for a few hours or whatever, or you're in some extreme situation, and you become aware suddenly of ghosts in the space and demons and angels and or many other types of entities that are all crossing through this space simultaneously with us, but living in different vibrational frequencies that only your total consciousness can perceive without obstruction and without confusion, and recognize that within everything there is the magical potentiality of metamorphosis, of instantaneous transformation, because we live beyond time and space, which are also simply limiting ideas. And so we need to free ourselves of all of those limitations of the signifiers that create those tiny two-dimensional realities that are not real and that cannot grasp what the real truly is even like. So I'm going to read from the Master Sin Yung's translation or the translation of his translation of the sutra, rather than Red Pine's, because I think, again, Red Pine didn't quite get it accurately in this one, like in a number of others. This is the 32nd and final section. Subhuti, if a person performs an act of generosity by giving away as many precious jewels as would fill illimitable worlds, and if a good man or a good woman commits to the bodhisattva mind and upholds as few as 4 verses of this sutra, but upholds them, reads them, studies them, chants them, teaches them, then his or her goodness and body of merit, which is should be in the translation, will be greater than that of the one with all the jewels or the one who would give the jewels in charity and earn good karma. None of that would be even able to hold a candle to the goodness and the power granted by understanding this sutra. 4 lines of it only. And then it ends with this, which I think is the most powerful injunction here. And how should this sutra be taught to people? In the Red Pine translation, he says, how should it be explained? By not explaining. But that's not what he's saying. It's not that you don't explain it. So what he says is, how should it be taught? By not grasping lakshana. I'll have to explain that word again. By remaining, it says here, immobile in this consciousness. I would say unwavering, not immobile, because you're extremely mobile, but unwavering in the totality of consciousness that grasps all in its whole form, in its formless wholeness. So, not grasping lakshana. Lakshana is a mark or a signifier, but it really is don't grasp anything within a particular realm of its total potentiality of effectiveness. So, in other words, we could see a glass of water. What is this? Well, if you're very thirsty, this could save your life. It could rehydrate a dehydrated body. It is something that will be necessary if you want to grow plants. If you want to live in nature, you've got to deal with the element of water. Thank you. But it's if you're a chemist, it's H2O. If you're an engineer, it might be the fuel for a steam engine or some new kind of engine to run a car. It might be something that you can take the hydrogen out and create a bomb and turn the water into fire. There are all kinds of things you can do with water, and if you understand it in the wholeness of its potentialities, then you will grasp reality in an infinitely different way from the way you would as an ego looking at something only through the lens of its own desires, its thirst, its needs for its bodily concerns, etc., etc. But if you're free of all of that and the totality of the ingenuity and the poetry and the beauty and the power of X-ray vision of consciousness are fully activated, then you will perceive very differently the realm that we are abiding in and as. So there's an indeterminacy and a multiplicity that makes up the unity of consciousness, but that, like a tree, has an infinite number of branches, and like a rhizome, has an infinite number of ways of proceeding underground, and is constantly elaborating upon its own boundaries, always pushing the envelope, always beyond where it is, because that consciousness is always discovering more and more to its infinite nature, that it is then digested and assimilated and produces ever further growth of the consciousness that is able to be translated from the mind of God into the human level of consciousness that can then be in that resonance and act as a channel and a medium and an instrument of the divine mind. So, he ends with a final poem. All conditioned dharmas. Red Pine says all created things, but nothing is created. But conditioned, I would actually say compound. Anything that is a compound. Anything that is made of signifier and signified. Anything that is perceived through the binary of subject-object. All conditioned dharmas are like dreams, illusions, like bubbles, like shadows, like dew, like lightning. All of them should be contemplated in this way. And so what do all of those signifiers have in common? They're temporary. They're not real. They have no endurance. They are not in the realm of consciousness, but simply momentary arisings of contents within the infinite sphere of the mind's capacity to dream, to project, to emanate, to interpret, to morph, to interconnect. And it is that entirety of the wholeness of being and of non-being, of the zero as well as the infinite quantitative realm and the qualitative realm of consciousness that perceives through affect, through feeling states, through all of the panorama of differentials of sensory modalities of color and form and texture and all of the other modalities of the more internalized consciousness that perceives the whole spectrum of emotions all the way up to the bliss of God consciousness and down to the dread of the death demons. All of it is a single whole, a single work of art of God that is absolute and completely timeless and beyond any limitation of anything that could be defined or grasped or taken out of the whole and possessed as if it was something separate. It is that level of consciousness that this incredible sutra is teaching us is our intrinsic nature. And we are free not to cheat ourselves of the divine royalty and power that comes with knowing who and what you are. And this is the cutting of the diamond mind when it is struck by the lightning of truth. May all of you know what it is to be that lightning itself. And to use that lightning to strike down the ego and its walls that obstruct your infinite, absolute, non-appearing self. May you know the peace of complete emptiness. And the emptiness of emptiness, as well as the fullness of emptiness. And may you know the even deeper peace of the non-obstruction of the infinite input of information and the transmission of that information throughout the morphogenic field of the cosmos and connect to that level of cosmic mind as one's own abode. And may one know the supreme peace of that ultimate abode that is not an abode, that includes within itself every abode, every realm, every frame of reference, every reality tunnel. in its ultimate, limitless, creative intelligence, in which all is understood with absolute simplicity. As the zero that is the self. Namaste.